Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we explore the more recent changes in how women are serving our state and nation, and we learn about business loan programs for veterans. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
March is Women's History Month. The national theme for 2012's annual recognition is Women's Education, Women's Empowerment. This month, the Library of Congress is doing an impressive job of telling a cross-section of women's stories, of which include our own military women. According to the Library of Congress, American women have been involved in the last four major wars. During Korea and Vietnam, women saw few advances in their roles in the military service. Then, in the 15 years between the end of the Vietnam War and the start of Operation Desert Shield, the armed forces opened up many specialties to women. And recently, in the Persian Gulf War, as well as conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, women's participation expanded immensely. Here in the Minnesota National Guard, the role of women has changed over the years as well. Today, the Command Sergeant Major of the 14,000 citizen soldiers and airmen in our ranks is Cynthia Kahlberg. She is the first female senior enlisted advisor to be selected in our state. When she joined in 1984, there was a lack of female mentors, but we are changing that. While nationally, women make up 14% of the military, here in Minnesota National Guard, they make up 17%, and our recruiting command is working on enlisting more women each year. This month, the nation is recognizing women's empowerment. For us, this theme will not change next month or the month after. Empowering women is at the core of what we do, and we will continue to do on a regular basis.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now to explore women's changing roles in the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard is the Chief of Staff from the Air National Guard, Colonel Dion Ford. Colonel Ford, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here, and I'm excited.
Well, as a former member of the United States Air Force, it's good to have an air person, an airman on the show, Colonel. Welcome. Glad to have you here today. Can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
Well, I can. I've probably been in longer than I'd care to admit, but I will. I joined the Air Force in 1981. And when I joined, most females at the time, I think, were really in support type roles, you know, finance, human resources, supply types of things. And my recruiter came up to me and he said, geez, you scored really well in electronics. How would you like to be in aircraft maintenance on fighter jets? And at the time, I thought, well, that sounds really cool. So I did that. And it was interesting because when I got into that business, I didn't really think that it was anything unique or that me being a female in that business would be unique. But when I actually got to my first assignment, I was the only female in my entire squadron. And again, it was interesting because when it came time to go work on a jet, you know, and you'd carry your tools out to the airplane or your aircraft parts out to the airplane, all of the male airmen who worked with me would try to be so polite and so helpful, and they'd say, hey, let me help you carry your toolbox, or let me help you carry your aircraft parts. And I remember even then thinking that although I appreciated them being so polite, I would always, you know, politely turn them down, say, no thanks, I can do it myself, because I really believed that if I was going to be an aircraft maintainer, then I needed to be an aircraft maintainer and do everything that any aircraft maintainer would do, male or female. And so then 10 years later, I got commissioned, 1991. And even then, it was some interesting times because I would be out in public and females in the military, although they were in the military, just were not, certainly probably more enlisted women in the military than officers. And and I'd be out and about in my blue uniform being Air Force, and people would see me and they would ask me two questions. They would either say, oh, are you a nurse? Or they would say, what airline do you fly with? So it's been interesting. It's been a real evolution. You know, I tell people that I'm in logistics in the Air Force, and that's always really amazing to everybody, and it's really amazing to me, too. I just think it's the neatest thing in the world.
We're speaking with Colonel Deon Ford, the Chief of Staff from the Air National Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, Chief of Staff for the Air National Guard side, what does that position mean?
Well, it means that I sit at a desk, I go to a lot of meetings, I sign a lot of papers, but it means that I am responsible for the well-being for all of the, I'm Chief of Staff for the Air National Guard, so I'm responsible for the well-being of all of the airmen in the Minnesota National Guard. We've got the 133rd Airlift Wing here in Minneapolis and the 148th Fighter Wing up in Duluth. And really all of their actions that need to take place for them to be a part of the Air National Guard go through my office. It's really neat. You know, I work for our Adjutant General, Major General Nash, and I work for the people in the Airlift Wing. So I get to see and work for a little bit of everybody in the Air National Guard.
Colonel, there's been an evolution and some big changes in how the role of women in the military since I was in and over the course of your career. You were telling me a story about your father and some of his buddies from World War II, and when they found out you were a colonel and they saw you, they had some comments, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. You know, when I joined back in 1981, my dad, who was a World War II vet, was so proud of me joining. And then when I decided to make it a career and stayed in over the years, of course, every time I would get a promotion, my dad would talk about me. He'd brag me up and down to all of his buddies. And in his more recent years, he gets his medical care at the VA hospital here. And so on occasion, I would meet him for lunch there when he was done with his appointments. And anybody that we'd run into that my dad would know, he would say, he would be so proud to introduce me, oh, this is my daughter, Colonel Ford. And it was really neat because those vets, didn't matter what war they were from, you know, they'd sit down with us and they'd tell me their stories and then they'd ask about my story. And, you know, inevitably it was so fun because they'd always end up saying, well, geez, they never had colonels that looked like you in my time. And so I thought that was kind of neat.
World War II guys being World War II guys, aren't
yeah,
they?
Mm-hmm.
So your dad was proud and marched you all over the VA and introduced you to everybody you could find.
Absolutely.
And in your career with the Minnesota National Guard since 1987, just in with a high picture view, what's changed for women in the military?
You know, first of all, the biggest thing that's changed is there are so many more women in the military now than there were in 1987. I have seen things change, especially being in the Air Force. I'm interested in flying. There have been changes for women as far as being able to fly, where they could fly, how they could fly. I've seen the Army change. You know, the Air Force doesn't have any women in combat exclusions. The Army, however, females over the years have been really limited as to what they have been able to do or what service they've been able to perform for the military. And that's all changing now, and I'm really excited to see where it's going. It's as women, we want to serve. It's people ask why women want to be in combat. And I'm not sure it's that we want to be in combat. It's that we want to serve, and we want to serve just like any of our male counterparts. So it's been fun to watch the evolution. There's so many more women in the military now. There's women in leadership now, which even 10 years ago, the women in leadership positions were few and far between. It's really neat to watch the military focus on growing the diversity, growing the women in these positions, and mentoring them along the way.
Colonel, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to dig in a little bit about the evolution of the women in the military over the last couple of decades and then get your thoughts on what do you think is going to happen over the next two or three decades for women in the military. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and joining me today is the Chief of Staff from the Minnesota Air National Guard, Colonel Dion Ford, and we're talking about women's changing roles in the military in the United States and, of course, in the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard. Colonel, at break, we were talking a little bit about women have always been involved to one degree or another to help our military in the history of our country. But early on, it was helping, and now you're hip deep, you're in, you're the colonel, you're up to your ears in it. That's really evolved a great deal from a long time ago, hasn't it?
Oh, it really has. I don't think people actually realize that women have been involved in the military since the beginning of the United States. Women, for instance, in the Civil War, although they were not in the military, they, as you said, helped the military. I mean, they were right there. They were there in combat. They were serving as nurses, helping to care for the wounded soldiers. They would deliver food and supplies. And then, of course, I think everybody knows about the women pilots in World War II. The Women's Army Auxiliary Corps was established in 1941. They served in World War II. They served in Pearl Harbor. They served in the Naval Reserve. They served in the Marine Corps Reserve. But interestingly enough, the Women's Armed Services Act wasn't signed by President Truman until 1948. And that is actually the act that allowed women to become a part actively in the military serving during peacetime. Then, of course, in 1942, the Women Air Force Service Pilots, the WASPs, that was a really neat group of ladies. It was about 1,100 or so ladies who were trained by the Air Force on all different types of aircraft. They ferried aircraft from the factories to military bases across the country. They were actually test pilots for newly overhauled planes, and they actually towed targets around for the ground and air gun, ground and air gunners to do shooting training at with live rounds. But interestingly enough, they were civilian volunteers. Although they were called the WASPs, the Women Air Force Service Pilots, they were not a part of the Air Force. They weren't granted military status until the 1970s.
But they freed up some of the male pilots to go into combat duty.
Absolutely. Yep. They were a critical part of our success in World War II. Of course, like I said, the Women's Armed Services Act of 1948 is what allowed us to actually join the military. But even at that time, women's roles in the military was very limited. Personally, because I'm in the Air Force, I have a bit of affinity for the flying pieces of the services. And in all services, there are women who fly, not just in the Air Force. The Navy actually was the first service to allow women to fly. And they allowed women in 1974 to earn their wings. And in 1974, six female pilots became the first naval aviators. It's unlike that now. We certainly have far more naval or aviators in the military. But to think in 1 year there were six, it's amazing how far we've come just in the last 30 or 40 years. The Air Force followed the Navy in 1976 and admitted women to their training pilot training program. But in all this time, when we had military flying back in the 70s, they were limited to non-combat flying. So it wasn't until 1993 that women were actually allowed to fly combat aircraft on record. And I put on record in quotes, if you will, if you can hear quotes on the radio, because even though on record they were not flying in combat, they were actually flying in combat. We had women aviators flying in Panama, in Grenada, in Desert Storm. But interestingly enough, even though they were there and they were flying there, their presence in those service areas were actually excluded from the combat records. So in 1993, again, is finally when women were allowed to fly combat aircraft. In Desert Storm, interestingly enough, in history, I love history and I love military history. In Desert Storm was a time when the first female pilot gave her life flying in a combat zone, and her epitaph reads, and I think this is just such an honor and such an honor to her memory, it reads, "The first female combat commander to fly into battle." Lieutenant Colonel McSally was the first woman in military history to fly a combat sortie in a fighter aircraft. The Desert Storm, I apologize, I'm not sure if I said the female who died in Desert Storm was actually a Chinook helicopter pilot.
We're speaking with Colonel Deanne Ford from the Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio about women's changing roles in the military. Colonel Ford, I know that the military's been doing a review, the Women in Service review. What does the Adjutant General, what does the Pentagon have to say about the changing roles for women, and especially with regard to combat duty?
Well, we're in an interesting time. You know, females in the military have been transitioning throughout history. Like I said, they were allowed to fly in combat back in the 90s, but still the Army has many jobs, if you will, many types of jobs that are limited to females because of that combat exclusion. Just recently on February 9th, the Army Chief of Staff, General Ray Odierno, announced that there are going to be 14,000 positions in the Army that will be combat-related jobs opening up to women. It'll start taking effect this spring, and it certainly is not all of the jobs in the military. There will still be some exclusions to women, but I think this is a big step for the Army, and it's really exciting for those of us in the military. You know, like I said, I joined back in 1981, and I got pinned as a colonel in 2008. And in 2008, I had, and since then, I've had so many young females in the military say, "Wow, you made it to colonel." You know, and they said, "So maybe that means I can do it." And I'll tell you, back in the 80s, when I set my goal, that was my goal, was to make colonel, because as a female in the military, I really... there are so few and far between females in top leadership roles. I didn't think that I could go much higher. But now I tell the young females, you know, that was my goal in the 90s. You got to set your sights way higher. It's time for them to set their sights to general, and I think that they'll be there, especially now that General Nash has put such a focus on diversity. You know, he has top six priorities for our organization, one of which is to grow diversity in the military. And we are absolutely committed. We're so excited about this change to allow women into these combat roles. We are absolutely committed that we are going to mentor females at all levels of the organization. We are going to make sure that they're trained to the same standards as their male counterparts. We're going to ensure that they're placed in positions and not just left there hanging, but we're going to give them the tools, like I said, in the mentorship to excel. So as the Army opens up more of these positions, Minnesota National Guard plans to be the first in line, and we're going to push forward, and we're going to give these females every opportunity to serve, because we want to serve our country, just like our male counterparts. And we got a long way to go, but Minnesota is really on the tip of the sword. We're moving right in there. We're going to jump into this full-blown, get these women in the combat positions. And it's exciting for me to see, as an older military person, it's exciting for me to see these new young females be able to serve right alongside their male counterparts. And you can't tell the difference, other than perhaps the length of their hair.
Colonel, we're just about out of time. It sounds like there's a good future for women in the military in the Minnesota National Guard.
I think there is. It's exciting times.
Colonel, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks.
That was Colonel Deanne Ford, Chief of Staff from the Minnesota Air National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Let's visit our Support Our Troops showcase and discuss how the Swarm, Minnesota's professional lacrosse team, is sending heroes to the Hive. Last year, Senior Airman Carly Vogel signed up to become an e-member with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. By receiving the weekly events and deals e-postcard in her inbox, Carly was the first to hear about all the special deals and offers for service members and military families. When Carly saw the offer for free tickets to the Minnesota Swarm's Heroes Night in this week's email, she jumped at the opportunity. Thanks to the generosity of individuals and companies that donated more than 1,000 tickets, Carly is set to visit the XL Energy Center with a few of her friends and family. During Friday's game, when the Minnesota Swarm go up against the Calgary Roughnecks, local service members, veterans, police officers, firefighters, and nurses will all be honored. To get tickets, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org and click on Events and Deals tab to find the Heroes Night offer. Print your ticket and fill out the registration for a chance to win season tickets to watch the Swarm in 2013. Many thanks to the Minnesota Swarm and the local businesses and individuals that made Heroes Night possible and going Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Sign up to become an e-member with Beyond the Yellow Ribbon and be the first to hear about ticket offers and other great deals for service members and their families. Simply visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org and click on Join Our Mailing List button. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, united to bring service members all the way home. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll learn about guaranteed bonus business loan programs for veterans. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelledo.
The First Medal of Honor, our nation's highest military award for valor in action against an enemy force, was presented on March 25, 1862. The United States Congress designated March 25th of each year as the National Medal of Honor Day. Governor Mark Dayton has also proclaimed today as Medal of Honor Day in the state of Minnesota. Since the Civil War, brave men and women from the state of Minnesota have answered the call to defend and protect the freedoms we hold dear, and several have gone beyond this call of duty, risking injury and loss of life. Of the 3,400 members who have received the Medal of Honor, 55 have ties to the state of Minnesota. Mike Colito, the last living Medal of Honor recipient in Minnesota from World War II, passed away on Friday, December 30th, 2011, at 86 years of age at a nursing home in Duluth, Minnesota. It is important for us to recognize, thank, and honor all of our Medal of Honor recipients for their valor and bravery.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelledo. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. From military service to entrepreneur, there are tools available for the veteran-owned small business, including business loan programs for veterans. Joining me on this topic is Nancy Liberski, the Minnesota District Director of the U.S. Small Business Administration, Tom Osborne, a lender relations specialist from the Veterans Business Development Officer from the U.S. Small Business Administration, and John Leschek from MinWest Bank. Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
As we know, we've been at war for about 10 years, and we've got a whole new crop of veterans, and a lot of them coming back from repeated deployments. And we know that many of them are interested in starting small businesses. And one of the things that we want to talk about are the resources available for veterans. And Nancy, for our veterans that have returned and they're so inclined to be business owners, if they came to you as district director, what would you counsel them in terms of where do we start?
Thank you for having us here today. Primarily, the Small Business Administration does have a lot of different resource partners that we help fund. These resource partners are there for anyone who really has a good idea or they have a gut feeling that they want to start a business. Primarily, we would start them out with our first resource partner, which is SCORE. They are Counselors to America's Small Business. SCORE counselors are throughout the state of Minnesota. We have six different chapters. These chapters will primarily stop what they're doing and sit and talk to an individual free of charge. They only have to make an appointment to go in, talk to any of the counselor. The counselor will direct them to starting your own business plan, financial statements, marketing, whatever it may be. If the individual has a little more expertise as far as starting the business, then we would refer them to what is called our small business development centers. We have 9 regional small business development centers in the state of Minnesota. These people are skilled professionals who will sit down free of charge as well, as many times as possible, to really go over what is necessary for particularly a loan application. They will make sure that the different loan programs are apprised to the individual.
They will also review the business plans to make sure that the business plan is up to the appropriate specification in order to prepare the individual so that they can go to the next step.
So, Nancy, these SCORE counselors are typically experienced or perhaps retired businessmen. They've been there. They've done it. So if a young person, a young veteran comes in and they've got an idea for a business or they want to think they want to be in business, they can talk to someone who's been there and say, okay, what does it take?
Absolutely. The SCORE counselors are professionals. Some of them have retired from corporate America or possibly their own business. And we have a lot of SCORE counselors right now that are currently in business. They own their own business. They understand what it means to own a business. And we are working with our state SCORE chapter chairs in recognizing the fact that we have to have specific counselors available for veterans so that they understand what a veteran is going through, their focus, and what they need. So we are working on that. We do have, we will have a list of SCORE chapter counselors that are specific for the veteran needs.
So when the veteran comes in and they've got an idea, they sit down with this experienced business person, work up, what does it take? Is it a sound idea? Can I take it to the marketplace? Is it worth going forward? And then at some point you have to decide, how am I going to do this? Am I going to do it with equity? Or am I going to do it with debt? And where do we go next? And then they either do that with SCORE or they go to the SBIC.
SBDC, absolutely. That is how you start it. Also, just so that individuals can find out what SCORE chapters are available, as well as the Small Business Development Centers, they can obtain this information on our Small Business Administration website, which is www.sba.gov/mn. And our resource guide on that particular website goes into specific details and contact information for SCORE chapters and the Small Business Development Centers.
This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, and we're talking about tools for veteran-owned small businesses with Nancy Liberski and Tom Osborne from the U.S. Small Business Administration and John Leshack from MinWest Bank. John, a lender is a key ingredient if we're going to start in business. We've talked to Nancy. If we've got an idea, you have to flesh it out, work it up, get a business plan. But then if they're going to come in and they're going to start talking about how do I fund this, then they come to you, correct?
That's exactly right. Usually I get to tools that they've already prepared with the help of the SBA. I sit down and I counsel them on exactly what it is they want to do, how they have to proceed with the next steps through an application. There's a host of SBA programs out there, as Nancy alluded to. One that works specifically well is the Patriot Express program. Generally speaking, I have veterans that come in here on a regular basis, stop by the bank, and I'm happy to take them by the hand and walk them through whatever they have currently done or direct them to other places that can help support them.
And, John, when they come to you with the idea and some of the forms and so forth, typically a bank to do any kind of a credit report or any kind of a loan application, you need projections, you need the ideas, you need the deal with the funding sources, equity, debt. Do you help walk them through that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Usually they come in, if they have used the SCORE facilities in the past, they come in with part of that done. I help tweak them with that for the specific type of facility or program they're looking for, whether it's buying a business, starting up a business, or if they're a current business owner that wants to refinance some debt to help their initial cash flow. So to answer your question, yes, I'm here to tweak it and prop it up so that I can get them in a position to get what they're looking for and enhance their dream.
And Tom, we just got about a minute left before we go to break, but could you explain the relationship between the SBA and the lender and who's doing what in that transaction?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Basically, the lender is our lending partner, and we're the ones that supply the backing for the loan. Rather than having a bunch of assets that you have to bring to the table when you do a loan, in this case, the government or SBA, our guarantee actually covers that asset or part of it. So if you want to get a loan, you usually have to have some kind of an asset in a conventional way. But with a guarantee loan, that is, it's easier for the bank to loan because they have the guarantee to back them up.
So just to clarify, the bank is providing the money, and the SBA, the Small Business Administration, is providing a loan guarantee.
That's right.
To make it easier for the bank to make the loan without being criticized and so forth.
Exactly true. Yep.
All right, Nancy and gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the specific loan programs that are available for veterans. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. This is Tom Lyons, your host, and we're talking about from military service to entrepreneurs, tools for veterans and veteran-owned small businesses with Nancy Liberski and Tom Osborne from the SBA and John Leshek from MinWest Bank. Tom, we want to talk about some specific programs, and one of the programs that we'd like to lead off with for veterans loans is the Patriot Express program. Could you tell me what's that about?
Okay. The Patriot Express is basically a variation of our SBA Express, and we've given extra features to this loan. We have a higher maximum loan amount on this. It goes up to about $500,000 instead of the lower amount on the regular SBA Express. It also has a lowered interest rate, a lowered maximum interest rate, and it qualifies for SBA's maximum guarantee, which would be up to 85%, depending on the amount of the loan. And this loan can be used for startup, expansion, working capital, inventory, business-occupied real estate purchases. It's a very flexible loan, and we made it that way on purpose just for the veterans and for the this particular program.
And so who's eligible for a Patriot Express loan program?
Veterans, service-disabled veterans, active-duty service members eligible for the military's Transition Assistance Program, reservists and National Guard members, current spouses of any of the above, and the widowed spouse of a service member or veteran who died during service or of a service-connected disability.
So once again, this is called Patriot Express. It's an SBA loan guarantee program with special interest rates for certain eligible veterans.
Exactly.
John, how does a veteran use this?
You can use it to acquire real estate for your business, owner-occupied. You can use it for working capital if you have an existing business or you're going to start a business and you need a facility similar to that. It can be used to refinance debt if you're a veteran that owns a specific business and wants to take and consolidate that into lower interest times that we have today to ease their cash flow. Part of the structure is that they have to be 51% owner to qualify for this in case they have other partners involved in there. But it also works well for them because it's simple. It's ease of use. The documentation that we have is something the bank can use. It's not laborious SBA forms that are involved. It's our own documents, so it's less documentation for them to fill out. It's easier for the bank to help support them to get a facility like this, predominantly because of what the guarantee rates are. If you have an SBA Express, Patriot Express loan under 150, it's an 85% guarantee for the bank, and it's 75% if it's higher. That gives the bank a comfort level to take the risk, especially in a startup business, to help facilitate a business of their dreams and move them through the process. Usually, I think the greatest thing involved with this is speed. From the time I get whatever I need, it's only a matter of 36 hours before we can get a decision. We're a preferred Patriot Express lender, which allows us to make that credit decision for the SBA that enhances the speed requirement that most borrowers are looking for today. So at the end of the day, there's a lot of benefits for the bank to go ahead and reach out and support the veteran, and there's a lot of ease and simplicity for the veteran to move forward in this type of endeavor.
So MinWest Bank is a preferred SBA lender.
Yes.
Which means you can move this paperwork through quickly and get a credit decision quickly.
Probably within an hour. At the time we make that decision, we electronically, through something called eTran, can shoot off the authorization to California, Citrus Heights, where the SBA decision makers are made at times. And we get the authorization number back within 15 minutes.
And just to re-clarify, if a veteran wants to apply for a Patriot Express loan program, they go to a bank for the money, and the bank goes to the SBA for a guarantee.
well, hopefully the bank won't have to go to the SBA for the guarantee. That's only if the business should default. But you're absolutely right. That's the way it works.
So they still have to go to a bank and go to a lender, and hopefully to a lender that knows what they're doing and works with SBA and the Patriot Express Loan Program.
That's absolutely correct. You still have to get a lender involved in it. We particularly take extra time in working with our partners like the SBA and the local district office to be in lockstep with who needs these types of facilities, what's new with these loans, what's coming down the horizon, so I can educate them and structure it appropriately for what they're looking for to maximize their payment schedule and maximize the mitigation of loss to the bank.
Nancy, clearly John at MidWest Bank has everything we need for the veterans to go to, but how many banks are able to process the Patriot Express loans properly and quickly with you?
Well, first of all, here in the state of Minnesota, we have over 400 SBA guaranteed lenders and credit unions. Now, not all 400 of them have the authority to do the SBA Express and Patriot Express loan programs. Those are truly our priority lenders, but it doesn't mean that we can't get over 400 priority lenders if, in fact, they qualify. So we do have a lot of qualified SBA guaranteed lenders that can activate the Patriot Express.
And if a veteran wanted to find out a list of those, is that available?
You can always call our SBA office at 612-370-2324 if you need specific details, as well as on our website at www.sba.gov/mn.
And Tom, that program sounds great. We've only got about a minute left, but there's some things you can do to help our veterans with franchising, and there's another program for military reservists that have economic injury due to disaster loans. Can you quickly just touch on those two?
That's a program where all the individual franchisors actually have control of what they offer to veterans as a special program to veterans. Usually it's in the form of reduced fees and sometimes education. But if there is a veteran out there that's interested in owning a franchise, that would be the way to go. You should call our office or go to our website, but it does vary widely between the different franchisors.
That's called the Vet Fran program, and there is a Vet Fran directory available. And once again, that's sba.gov/mn. I'd like to thank our guests from the SBA and MidWest Bank, and for more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. And now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard, Doug Bly. Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio, Doug.
Well, good morning, Tom. Thanks for the opportunity to spend a couple minutes with you.
I understand you've got a little information for us today about 2011 as compared to 2010 and all the missions that the Patriot Guard riders go on in Minnesota.
No, I do. And, we're just a little bit late pulling it together than we'd like. But we always try and keep track year over year where the trends are going with the different types of missions. So we're prepared with people and leadership. And we did in 2011 of our core missions and PGR events, 442 days. Of different activities, and that compares to 413 in 2010. So about a 10% growth. What's important to us that we're tracking is our vets missions. We did 189 veterans missions in 2011, and that's up from 176 in 2010. What's really interesting is this year so far, we're already double the rate for veterans missions last year. So if the pace continues, we'll be doing about 250 veterans missions this year, if not more.
And what area is up, Doug?
You know, it's really all over the state, Tom. You know, we have probably someone 2 to 3 times a week now at Fort Snelling National Cemetery, but I think the word is getting out across the state. So we've got a team up at the state veterans cemetery up at Camp Ripley. But it's also the small town funerals that are starting to come in as people learn more about how to request a mission and what we'll do. And I think more and more we're seeing people would like to have, you know, a show of honor, dignity, and respect from the community given to their veteran who's passed away. So it's simple to do. All people have to do is go to our website, and they click on the left-hand side where it says Request a Patriot Guard. It goes to our missions team, and then someone will respond to you very quickly. So anyone who served honorably is eligible for our service and support. We just ask for prefer 48 hours notice, but we do whatever we can to support those.
And Doug, are you still getting new riders to sign up every day?
You know, we do, Tom. It's amazing. You know, we keep flirting with that 6,000 member mark, and you know, we have some people who say, you know, I can't do this anymore, and the next day, 30 more people come right back in. So we're actually going to be at the Donnie's Fish Show this weekend with an information booth and selling tickets for a raffle motorcycle and talking to some more folks there.
And Doug, you've got your big annual event coming up.
We do June 16th up in Ham Lake. It's called the Patriot Ride, www.thepatriotride.org. And it is a phenomenal day, Tom. 3,000 motorcycles, about 4,000 to 5,000 people. And it's entirely and completely based on how do we show support and appreciation for those who are serving today and those who have served. And it's a wonderful day. There's just everyone walks away with you know, the good feeling in their heart about the fact that they were there. And we had a magazine article written about us last year, and the author got it. He said, within 10 feet of walking in, I understand this is hallowed ground, and that's what it really feels like. So we're excited, Tom, to June 16, 2012, up in Ham Lake, and we're really excited to pull that one off again.
And folks, for our listeners, you have to be there to see it, and you have to be there to believe it. It's all about honor, dignity, and respect. Hope you get a great turnout on June 16th, and thanks for joining us today, Doug.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you soon.
We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Dion Ford from the Minnesota National Guard, our friends from the SBA and MinWest Bank on business loans for veterans, Doug Bly from the Minnesota Patriot Guard, Commissioner Larry Shelado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and, of course, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we follow the path of two Minnesota Marines through the first Gulf War and talk about cash grants available to Minnesota troops who serve. That's next Sunday morning at 7 or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.